Welcome back to another edition of the podcast for the Business Edge, where we tackle local issues on governance, the economy, and politics. Today, we're going to look at something that is very crucial to all aspects of life here in PEI, and it's also crucial to the economy, and that's healthcare. It's been in the news a lot over the last few weeks, and I think it's probably going to remain in the news for an extended period of time just due to the severity of what we're experiencing. And I want to tie in a book that we've recently released here called Triage. And it's all about building frontline healthcare resilience. And if anybody wants a copy, I can just send a note in. I can tell you where to get one. They're certainly available in hard copy and soft copy and even on Kindle. If you're from the healthcare industry, I'll get you a copy because I think it's important for people to sort of see there are strategies to combat some of the challenges that we're experiencing. So healthcare is sort of a sacrosanct element of society. Certainly within Canada, it's accessible, it's affordable, but I'm not sure that's going to remain either accessibility or affordability because we're in a bit of a crisis. We have had a lot of things occur here over the last number of months, everything from, you know, the family physicians, 100 of them have signed a letter basically expressing displeasure with how the administration are managing their cohort. Last week, I lost my family physician. Yesterday, which was, may date this, but another very prominent, primary care physician in Summerside has resigned. And unfortunately, these are the first movers, and it's not the last that we're going to see. You know, the wait list in PEI presently is over 35,000 Islanders. I guess I would have to register to get on that list or to deal with a remote service, Maple, which I haven't tried. It might be a great service, but I want high touch physical support for my aging person. And I don't think Maple is going to be satisfactory in my case. But there is no solution. If I'm on a 35,000 person wait list, it's pretty evident that I'm not going to get assigned a family physician probably in my lifetime. And that's not acceptable. We pay taxes and we expect results and we expect the administration to manage this effectively. So let's kind of delve into this a little bit. This podcast, tying in Triage, this book that I think has a lot of relevance to Health PEI, the Department of Health and Wellness, and it's been well received across Canada. And there's a software that accompanies it called LaborMine. You can go check it out, labormine.com. And it really helps to manage the human resourcing and planned exits, something that apparently seems to be well lacking locally. The other thing that we'll probably delve into a little bit is the cost and the application of resource. And despite almost an unmanageable healthcare budget on PEI growing at a rate that's outstripping our GDP, are we applying resources where they should be applied? So we'll talk about, you know, hiring frontline, you know, medical professionals, whether that's nursing or primary care physicians or other specialties, or is it going into administrative resources, which have grown and ballooned over the last couple of years under the current government to a degree that it's outstripping the private sector and actually stripping labor from the private sector. And then there's infrastructure, you know, pretty significant investments in physical infrastructure that may or may not be warranted, certainly is more questionable now that we've got less resources that can support it. So let's delve into this. We're going from crisis to clarity and rethinking healthcare workforce strategy and PEI. This has been a difficult few months. Difficult, should be difficult if you're in government. Certainly difficult if you're a constituent of PEI, an Islander, because there's been physician departures, staffing fatigue, rising overtimes, expanding capital budgets, and certainly declining morale. And we're going to look at a few things, but the shift in thinking that must occur is critical. And I'm not sure where that's going to come from. It probably needs to be in collaboration with the most senior levels, which I guess would be the premier. And I think the opposition have to play a part in this, not just to be critical, but to be presenting solutions, because I think the scope and challenge of this has well surpassed the capabilities of the current government. And unless they find a way to address this, I think it's pretty clear the trajectory that we're on. And back to the economy, the loss of healthcare infrastructure, human capital infrastructure, is going to result in a decline in the economic kind of underpinnings of the province, because rational actors, mobile constituents, mobile business investors and owners may not elect, in fact, I can tell you certainly will not elect to remain connected to PEI if they can't get basic services that they expect when they're available in other provinces. And to be fair, this is a challenge that's not unique to this Canada's smallest province. It's across Canada. So we need more critical, more profound, more constructive consideration in how to address this. So, you know, in PEI, this recent news cycle, we've highlighted physician exits, recruitment struggles, clinical consolidation, waitlist growth. Millions are committed to new builds, expansions, and infrastructure upgrades, but there's nothing inherently wrong with capital investment, and facilities do matter, equipment matters, but this is the uncomfortable truth. Buildings don't deliver care, people do. You can't solve a workforce crisis with capital expenditures alone. You know, what we need is, you know, a reactionary staffing model is not the approach. We're trying to fix structural labor imbalances with short-term incentives, and we need urgent recruitment pushes. And the recruitment departments certainly celebrate the successes that they're having, and they are having some success. But we do recruitment. We do it across Canada. We do it with health facilities all over Canada, including PEI. I can tell you that the pace, engagement, and responsiveness of the current approach is not adequate in a competitive market. And we have seen that impact. Province has seen the impact. But we do see more responsive engagement from other areas in the country. And certainly that's, as a rational business owner, that's where we intend to focus our efforts as well. Happy to solve problems, but there needs to be a willingness there to engage and support it. So let's put this fairly bluntly. It takes 20 years to create a 20-year-old, and demographics don't tend to bend to budget. So we can't solve our lack of clinical physicians, healthcare professionals quickly. And we're not going to create enough nurses or doctors or specialists easily. They've got to be recruited. We have had some arguable success in increasing the benchmark of remuneration in PEI, but that's quickly outstripped by other provinces better financially healed, and everybody's competing for the same limited resource. We need to be more creative in how we engage, onboard, recruit, engage, and it's not just about remuneration, although as we're seeing in the family physician community, remuneration is important, but there's other factors, and certainly an accommodating, welcoming, engaged administration is also important. So that brings us to the demographic squeeze. And healthcare systems across North America are all facing this convergence of forces. It's aging population, it's post-pandemic burnout, it's early retirements, slower domestic training pipelines, and changing workforce expectations. This is a three-legged stool, as we refer to in the book, between patients, employers, and employees. And if one of those legs of that three-legged stool weakens or breaks, the whole system wobbles. And we're seeing a pretty pronounced wobble on that three-legged stool. How do we fix it? Well, when a physician leaves or reduces scope, the remaining clinicians absorb the load, or try to. Workdays stretch, administrative burden grows, and morale dips. And morale does matter. You know, high workloads, accelerated burnout. This burnout, it just continues to expand and compound and frustrate those left trying to service a system that really can't be serviced. Diverting to other strategies like online, like Maple, it's not a solution. It's an approach that would probably reduce some of the more urgent care, but in reality, what's going to happen is people are not going to get the care that they require, They're not going to get the interventions that they need. They're not going to get followed by anybody. And that's going to result in maybe more long-term cost to the system. So it's a vicious cycle. You know, we've got departures, redistribution of workloads, emotional fatigue, and then further departure. This cycle will continue. And I'm not sure it's going to be easily rectified. I think there needs to be a change in expectations, unfortunately, of the public on how they access care, where they access care. But there has to be an accessibility of care in the emergency departments. It can't be the primary care physicians for the province. And that's what's happening. It's overloading the emergency departments. And that also is going to cause further degradation in the system, the more pressure that we put on the points that aren't designed to absorb that pressure. And there's a technology misconception. So there's another tension that's playing out. We hear a lot about AI and automation, but you know, in our book, we talk about technology should augment but not replace human care. Telehealth, digital intake, remote monitoring, AI-assisted triage, all of these can reduce administrative pressure and optimize clinician time, but technology is not a substitute for workforce design. If PEI builds new facilities without building predictive HR intelligence, the strain on simply relocating inside larger walls, that doesn't solve the problem. In fact, I'd question if we should really even be investing in physical infrastructure based on our provincial debt, which is another management concern. So the question is not, do we have enough beds? The question is, do we know when and where we will lose the next staff? And I think that's a complication that is missing. And this is where a proactive AI-enabled healthcare system like LaborMine can help to augment the decision-making of those that are managing the processes, in this case, within the provincial government, within the Department of Health, within the individual hospitals. And that data needs to feed back in and have a loop into the private sector. So this is private sector nursing homes and ultimately private sector healthcare delivery, which is going to start to creep in. It has crept in. It's available across Canada and it's going to be available to people in this region. It's just a natural evolution or devolution, if that's how you feel about privatization. But it's going to happen and we may as well be organized and prepared for it. So let's look at data. And does data replace assumption? One of the most powerful statements in the book that we're talking about, triage, is data replacements of assumptions. So right now, most health systems rely on lagging indicators. So what I mean by that is when somebody leaves, maybe they do an exit interview. You know, there's a vacancy rate that you can monitor. There's overtime spikes. There's agency investment. And agencies are really travel nursing primarily in PEI. So, you know, there's an additional financial burden to reliance on agencies, but there's really not an option today because there's been no proactive planning. And unfortunately, there's really no measurement or management of the human resource pool or understanding of when people are exiting and building appropriate fortification around those timetables to manage them. So, you know, the solution in triage is really around predictive workforce analytics, and that's all built into this LaborMine platform. So in practical terms, instead of waiting for a physician to resign, LaborMine analyzes the age distribution of retirement eligibility. It looks at the engagement sentiment shifts, external economic overlays, and these could be things from, you know, the housing costs, market volatility, like the stock market volatility, which can affect a person's decision to exit the workforce. There's regional workforce competition that would include what's happening in other areas that people would rationally be mobile to travel to. So are we competitive with wage rates in our neighboring provinces? Younger people might travel farther, but most people are going to want to stay in your general vicinity. And this is a challenge that occurs within private sector nursing homes. You're competing with a disproportionate competitor, the public sector, who have traditionally seemed to have unlimited resources. That's changing, of course, and it will change, but that's been a competitive factor that the private sector have been burdened with and competing against for quite some time. And then we can also look at workload intensity patterns and how is that shifting. And as there's departures, there's more workload imbalance. And that, again, just it's a cycle that increases fatigue and consideration of exit. So all of these factors kind of generate this workforce vulnerability score. And it's that score, which is presented in a term as a percentage, that decision makers or managers or human resource departments or government can use to make systemic decisions on managing the workforce. So in other words, it tells leadership where the cracks are forming before they become fractures. And today there's so many fissures in the system, I don't know if there's enough fingers to plug all the holes. So let's look at the capital costs versus the human capital. And there's an uncomfortable question that PEI is grappling with. If we can improve major capital expansions, such as new hospitals, new physical investments in infrastructure, even new medical school, why are we not investing equally in predictive human capital intelligence? This is really something that needs to be part and parcel of any of these strategies or investments. You've got to manage that workforce. So in the book, we argue that HR is no longer a back office function. It's a core strategic discipline. And that's not unique to healthcare. We see that across all of our employer engagements. HR was once relegated to a line item function well below marketing. Today, it's probably one of the most crucial elements of any organization. Again, that will change with the advent of technology and specifically AI in the local provincial context. But you'll never replace high touch functions. And that would be things like healthcare. AI can augment a lot of things, including clinical diagnoses, but you're always going to need a physical person, especially in nursing, to engage and support and aid patient management. So workforce forecasting should sit beside financial forecasting. It's that crucial in any organization. 22% of senior clinicians are within 5 years of retirement. Leadership know that today, not in 4 years, we've got to be looking at that timeline because those dates can shift and they can shift from factors outside of the purview of the employer. And then sometimes, even with outside the purview of the employee, there's personal factors, spousal factors, children factors, parental factors. All these things are attributes that you can start to monitor. You'll never get 100% intimacy and understanding what's happening inside a person's psyche or planning, but you can mitigate that with proper management of data. And I think that's an element that is absent. Just as HR was relegated to a lower consideration in the not too distant past, like less than 15 years ago, management of this data and support and supply of your workforce is now crucial. The other thing to look at is if morale dips in correlation with overtime clusters, that should trigger proactive design or redesign. So as a physician leaves the service, more pressure is relegated to those that remain. That increases stress and burnout and future exit. If rural retention risk is rising, recruitment pipelines should open before departures occur. And again, that's being proactive and looking at what's going to happen with anticipation. And I know people would probably argue that they're doing that, but empirically, and I think any citizen can look at what's happening today, I think that's not occurring. So that's reactionary. It's not strategy. And I think this is the situation that we find ourselves in. So there's a bit of a moral question that's often dismissed as intangible, but morale is predictive. You know, if you look at longitudinal reflective surveying, tracking subtle sentiment shifts over time is how you can manage morale. And we do have techniques to do that, which are proprietary and engaging on a sort of psychoanalytical level with individuals to understand what's going into the context of them making the decisions. And these are the employees. What are the factors that are affecting them? And that could be things from certainly workload fatigue, but also you know, what's their comfort with not just management, but their direct management. These things allow people or give them the catalyst to consider where they want to focus, how they want to work, and what their work-life balance will ultimately look at. PEI is tightly interconnected. It's a small healthcare community, and morale shifts travel very fast. Word spreads, perceptions solidify, and once the damage starts to create a crack, as we discussed earlier, that crack expands, and the expansion can get to a point where it's unmanageable. That's why you've got to address the cracks, ideally before they occur, but certainly having a proactive approach based empirically on data is the best way to avoid these cracks from expanding. And retention is not just about money. It's about alignment and flexibility and communications and perceived leadership competence. These are all the factors that need to be addressed and are being assessed by the individual workers. So how do we move from reactive to resilient? Well, in the book, one of the things that we look at, and a quote I'll pull from it, is we cannot outspend or outwork a systematic labor shortage, but we can outthink it. And this is where AI and the power of data comes in. That's a pivot point for PEI or any community across Canada. At least in PEI, the island is small enough to adapt and lead. Small systems can be agile. Agility requires visibility, and visibility requires analytics. So what do we do? Well, if you're a healthcare executive, policy leader, a board member in a healthcare facility or for the province, stop managing the workforce in hindsight. Deploy LaborMine, conduct a workforce vulnerability assessment, monitor that, manage it, integrate predictive HR analytics into your leadership dashboards, and make informed decisions, because decisions are being thrust today in the absence of having any potential to react or respond or engage or correct. Once the decision of a physician or a healthcare professional or a nurse, senior nurse, is made, they're not retracting. And the loss of human capital, human knowledge of a senior person from an institution, in this case healthcare, is profound and not replaceable. And we need that senior thought leadership to train the next generation, or you'll be raised in a vacuum and bad habits will form. And that is the next wave of consideration and certainly concern that we need to be aware of. So make for workforce risk as visible as financial risk. It's got to be displayed and communicated and shared, because here's the truth. Shortages should never undermine the mission of providing optimal patient care, but they will. If leadership continues to operate without foresight, the workforce crisis is structural, it's measurable, and it's manageable, but with intelligence. So there's a few quotes I just want to share with you that are kind of, I think, relevant. A few of them that we've talked about, but for reactive leadership, data replaces assumptions. It's perhaps one of the most operationally important lines of the book. It's workforce resilience begins when leadership moves from instinct-driven decisions to predictive analytics. Another one on a systematic labor scarcity is we cannot outspend or outwork a systematic labor shortage, but we can outthink it. And this quote captures the strategic pivot of triage. It's intelligence over exhaustion, foresight over funding alone. And when considering the future of healthcare, another quote here is that the future of healthcare is not defined by the shortages we face, but by the intelligence, compassion, and leadership we bring to solving it. So the challenge has fallen on the shoulders of health leadership, which then eventually transfers to political leadership. It's kind of gotten to a point today, allowed to get to the point by political leadership, that it's arguably unmanageable by those trying to make the decisions to hold it together. And I'm not certainly prepared to provide solace or comfort to those that have made poor decisions or decisions that have led us to the place that we're at today. But I think there has to be recognition that now things have, you know, transcended to a place that is perhaps bigger and more challenging than those appointed to manage it can certainly address and respond and adapt to. So the point is, it's now a collective societal issue that requires the collective societal consideration to repair. Should never have gotten to the point that we're at, but here we are. And that's why, you know, I wrote this book on building frontline healthcare resilience. It's available on Amazon. You can get on Kindle or hard copy or soft copy. But that really feeds back into the solution. And the solution in this case, this is over 20 years of human resource experience, originally as a CPHR, RCIC, MBA. We've been working in this sector across Canada. We worked in every province of Canada for 20 years. We've seen organizations that plan well and how they respond and adapt to challenge. We've seen organizations that don't plan well, and most of those, if it comes to HR, are probably not functioning any longer today. So I don't want to see our healthcare collapse further. I and 35,000 other of my island colleagues don't have access to healthcare. Completely unacceptable. And it kind of goes against the conventions of, you know, the Health Act and what we kind of expect as Canadians. Situation is not going to get better. My challenge to leadership would be, this is the time to pivot. Acknowledge that you have perhaps made errors, that some of these challenges are outside the scope of what you now can control, especially as we are on the cusp of seeing a bit of a swell or an avalanche or cascade's probably a better word, of departures. They've started. They're not going to abate. They're going to continue. And we need to collectively come up with a solution to respond to that. A few other kind of just thoughts here from the book. You know, shortages should never undermine the mission of providing optimal patient care. You know, we've seen the headlines of physician departures, clinical hours increasing. We've addressed a lot of this. The current environment is moving faster than the static publication of a standard book. But, you know, these are issues that everybody is grappling with. We're not unique in PEI, but we can, because we're small, be more nimble and more adaptive. We do have considerations to offer in recruitment that other locations don't have. Some of the demerit points that we have is that we don't have a teaching hospital, and that's not a medical school. That's a location where there's specialists. And due to the complexity of care, many physicians want to have the comfort that there's a specialist service that they can refer to or specialists that they can get access to. And those are either not available or in decline in any small market. PEI is not different. But what we do offer is a secure, safe environment where families can reside, which is becoming unique, I think, certainly across the globe. And these are the kind of things that I know the recruiting departments consider, but there's other push and pull factors when it comes to recruitment. And it's not about displaying a beach or Anne of Green Gables or golf course. It's about providing a lifestyle and accessibility for family members. And that's the competitive pressure that we're competing against when you're looking at a global talent pool. I'm not sure we've gotten that today, but we're going to have to capture it very quickly. So that's a bit of an overview on sort of an assessment of where we're at. This very much aligns with some of the writings that we have taken the time to write about in Triage. We can put a link up on where that's available. If you did want to get a copy or reach out, we'd be happy to share it. But there's an increasing potential for great challenge in our healthcare delivery system here on PEI. We're competing from a disadvantage, a fiscal disadvantage, and we need to be smarter on how we manage our workforce. And one way to do that is with a tool like LaborMine that tracks data and makes informed analytical decisions, or at least gives the information so somebody can take an informed approach to make a decision. And whether it's right or wrong, at least there's supportive data behind that. If this conversation resonates, share it with a healthcare leader in your network and pick up a copy of Triage. Explore its full framework. And until next time, lead proactively, not reactively.